Welcome back to season 7 of the Sister Brunch podcast. We're the podcast all about Black women and Black gender expansive people who are thriving in entertainment and media and theater and all the things. And we love especially introducing you to guests who do jobs that you may not have ever heard of. And so Sean's going to tell us a little bit about that. And speaking of Sean, look who's here with me. Sean Pipkin West, also known as Pip, who you can go back to, I think it's maybe season 1 or 2, and listen to Sean's early episodes. Mm-hmm. And now Sean is directing, continuing to produce, continuing to work on all the things. So welcome back, Sean.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be back. And so blessed that you got season 7.
I know.
Lucky season 7.
Yes, this is a good one.
Very, very integral, pivotal season. And thank you for asking me back. I miss you guys. But it's good reasons why I haven't been here regularly, because I am busy working, which I'm so grateful and thankful to be here. Working on a show, untitled Dan Fogelman football show right now. It will be airing in 2027 as of right now. So just remember this. It's in the future, way in the future. But thank you. But now, let's talk about our guest. She is someone who you may not like. What does she do? What? But believe me, if she did not do her job, we wouldn't really have a film television industry at all. Please welcome the incredible, incredible Kelly Harris.
Yes.
Kelly Harris.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
We are so glad to have you here. I always like to, if I can, if there's a connection with a guest, I'd love to share how I learned about you. So I was at the COLA Awards, which are the California On Location Awards. We have awards for location managers across the state. And they were honoring a man named Ed Duffy. And so they were doing the video package. And this amazing, badass Black woman comes on. Because I remember sitting there looking in the audience and thinking, like, I wonder if there are any Black women that do this, right? Because we don't see. And there, this woman came on, powerful and clearly, you know, beloved by that community itself. And so I approached you right afterwards and asked you to be on Sister Brunch, and you said yes. So we're so glad.
Yes.
Kelly, we want to hear your story, key moments in your life, starting with where you were born and how you ended up coming here, if you came here, or maybe you were born here, but how did you end up doing this particular role in the industry?
So I am originally from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Okay.
Go Bengals.
Okay. Go Bengals. Well, not anymore. Maybe next year. Born and raised in Cincinnati, I attended performing arts schools, junior high school. I went to the University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music, and I studied broadcasting and film production there.
Okay.
Believe it or not, we had during that time a period of time where a lot of films came to town. John Sayles and folks like that. So we had, like, you know, Mate Juan, City of Hope. And then a little film called Rage in Harlem came to town.
Oh.
And the
they filmed it there?
Rage in Harlem was filmed in Cincinnati, Ohio.
I did not know that.
Whoa.
Yes. And Bill Duke was the director on that project. Yes. And when he came to Ohio, he specifically told the troops, you know, when you hire local people, I want to see African-American people on the crew.
Bill Duke, shout out, gratitude to Bill Duke, who is always making sure.
And Rage in Harlem, if you have not seen this film, you need to go rent it, download it, whatever. Watch this film.
Yeah. And it's not Harlem Nights.
No.
That's right. No.
It's very different film. Very different film.
That's right.
So we had the amazing Forrest Whitaker.
Robin Givens.
Gregory Hines. Just amazing talents that were in this particular film. And that's where I was able to cut my teeth in the feature world.
What role did you do on that?
I was in locations. And this kind of brings me to one of the things about all of our jobs in the industry. It's about relationships.
Yes.
And a young man that I went to college with remembered me and called me up and said, hey, there's a project coming to town. Are you interested in working? And it was right in between the time I had started going back to school to get my MBA. And I'm like, I have some time off. Sure. You know, And I didn't remember who this guy was. Uh-oh. But he was going to be at the meeting when I was going to interview with the location manager. And then, of course, when I walked in the lobby of the place, I recognized the guy. So you never know. And I bring this up because you never know who's watching you.
Yes. Yes.
And this was someone that I wasn't really friends with, but he remembered me.
Mm, you made an impact.
Yes. I made an impact. Yeah. So I met the location manager. She was out of New York. And she really wasn't too keen on the idea of bringing me on because she, you know, had her people and everything. Oh, mm-hmm. And she said to me, you know, like, I'm hiring you because you're Black and the director wants to have Black people on the crew.
Mm-hmm. And because I'm good and you'll see that I'm about to run circles around you. You probably couldn't say that at that point, but that's
basically
what
I was early, it was early in my career. And basically what I said to her is, it's my responsibility to prove to you that you didn't make a mistake.
There you go. Yep.
And to this day, I have a great friendship with that location manager. Okay. She's New York based. She's a producer these days. And then, you know, you meet people and I'm, you know, Bill Duke's assistant. Made a comment to me at one point. She goes, I winter in LA. Now, for somebody in Cincinnati, I didn't know what that meant, but I sure the heck wanted to do it. And I caught a train with my garment bag and a suitcase.
Yes.
And I came out here. In the meantime, there were a couple of other films that I worked on back in Cincinnati, and one was like a Hallmark type movie. And Doris Roberts and Olivia Newton-John were in it. It was called A Mom for Christmas.
Sandy from Grease.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
People always tell you, if you come to town, give me a call. So I end up down at Union Station. The person I was supposed to go hang out with, stay with, they were at work. Mm-hmm. So I call this location manager. And, you know, I said, hey, Liz, it's Kelly Harris. And she goes like, great. How you doing? I said, great. I'm here. And she goes, here where? I said, someplace called Union Station. So at that time, it was 1990.
I'm sorry, you took a train from Cincinnati to L.A. back?
I thought I wanted to see the country.
There was days was that?
It was
trip,
3 days and there was nothing to see.
Oh, so that's not the route you would want to go from Surfliner is beautiful, by the way. We will say that's the route you want to go, but not the Cincinnati to
Joe Biden would be proud.
But exactly. Yes. So, you know, I took the train out and she picked me up downtown. And she goes, find somebody in a uniform. Don't go outside. Stay there. I'll pick you up. Mm. And she pulls up, picks me up. And she was actually, her name was Liz Matthews, and she was actually wrapping up a production and about to begin another one. Okay. And she goes, I'll pick you up tomorrow. We'll hang out. You know, you can see what I do here in LA in terms of locations. And I spent the day with her and I got exposure to like a location service, which we didn't have location services. Yeah. And for those of us that don't know what a location service is, it's a company that represents different properties that are used in film, television, still shoots, and even events. Mm-hmm. So I was able to see that operation and how they were set up. So that was great, you know, because we didn't have that. Back home, I'm your location service. And,
right.
You know,
at that time, there was no, I mean, I'm thinking probably like Google comes in handy for locations now. But at that time, what was it like kind of?
Yellow pages.
Like paper maps. Right?
Once again, we go back to relationships.
Yeah.
You know, and and then you just become familiar with areas. And because I grew up in Cincinnati, I knew, you know, downtown Cincinnati really well. And I knew that some of those buildings down there would look like the buildings that were in Harlem.
Yes.
You know, and then we had one residential street called Dayton Street that really would look like a residential street in Harlem. So one of the last ones that hadn't been torn down or gentrified. So we did a lot of filming there and then, you know, did things like close down Main Street in downtown Cincinnati every night for 2 weeks, gunfire, all types of stuff, car chases. And then by like 7 a.m, we'd open it up and traffic would go in and out of downtown.
You know what? Since you said that, and because your role is something we've never had on the podcast, it was so beautiful to have this representation in this role. Can you take us through a day in the life of a location manager so that our folks know what it is?
Absolutely. Well,
first thing when you're hired, what is the first thing you would do on a film or a TV show?
Okay. Once they have made the right decision in terms of bringing me on.
That's right. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
it all begins with, believe it or not, like most people would say the script, I'll say the budget.
Okay.
The studio has a budget in mind for the entire project when they start out. And then they will allot a certain amount of money to each department. Now, I look at that as just one big pot, because there's some days where my budget might help out another department and vice versa, depending on what we're doing. So it starts with the budget. Then I get the script. In episodic television, if we're at a studio lot and we have locations that are built on a stage, anything that's in that script that's not on stage, my department has the task of like finding those locations. So my position can be a very creative, you know, position. It's also a department of service, but we'll get into that a little bit later. So what I do is try to figure out different options that could work for different sets that are in that script. So we will go out and we will scout. Okay. And I have a team of scouts. You know, I usually have, I look at it as, you know, we're a tree. I'm the trunk. My key assistant location managers are my limbs. And the ALMs, which are assistant location managers, they're the leaves. You know, they're the people that help maintain and provide for the crew on any given day when we're filming.
What a great analogy. Amazing. What a great analogy. Yes, I love that.
I love it. Okay.
So we'll go out, we'll scout locations. I like to cold scout, which that means I'm not going to a location service. Sometimes in episodic, you do use services because just lack of time.
Yes.
Because you can scout.
Cinema scout, is that one? Or is there a real scout?
Location scout. It starts with a location and then a producer scout.
But so the services. Scout.
Yeah, the services.
Okay,
yeah.
There's like cast locations, Universal, Hollywood locations. And the location service, I actually worked for one for probably about 3 or 4 years when I first moved out here. Location Enterprises. And that was one of the, I want to say the first or second that was created. And that one was created by a woman, Beverly Metzler, who was kind of a society person. Her husband was a producer at Disney. And then he was also the business manager for the Academy Awards for like 45 years.
Oh, wow.
So he came home one day and he's like, you know, we're filming at our friends' houses and doing all that. He goes, why don't you kind of represent these places and then, you know, use the money and dedicate, you know, give it to some of your favorite charities. So that company started out as a company that donated the proceeds to charities.
Amazing.
But then Beverly's like, what am I doing here?
Yeah, okay, okay. Right, woman came in and said, I could make some money off this.
And so I won't say the charities went away completely, but, you know, she saw it as a real profit-making opportunity for her.
Okay.
So location services, for instance, I could see a beautiful colonial house and I might go inside and the inside doesn't match the exterior.
Okay.
So with a service, it saves time because I can go to a website. When I started, you would check out photographs from the service in notebooks or folders, and you're able to see what the interior looks like.
Okay.
You always, though, before you go on a director scout, so you have your options, I go scout them, then I would come back and show them to my director, Pip, the production designer, my first AD and my producer.
Yes.
And then based on the storyline, and also with the first AD, which is another position, like Pip's such a rock star at it.
Yes.
When she's,
I know that's the hard part. People don't want to lose Pip as a first AD, but Pip is a director, right? So I'm like, yes. I like that she set her up as the director in this one.
It's like having someone like Pip as a director. That's like the best director because she understands.
You guys hear that, Disney?
Fox, everybody.
Netflix.
Listening.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, because
Paramount.
Pip understands what every department needs.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Yes.
And, you know, she's about the creative vision and what the talent needs, but she also understands the logistics of the whole thing.
And the production of it all.
And the production.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're looking at a schedule. So I might have the anchor location, say, is this colonial house. And then there might be some other things written in there, like a drugstore or a park. And just say at that colonial house, if we're going to only film there for a couple hours or, you know, half a day, and the same talent is working in some other scenes, the first AD will say, well, let's try to find these other things within walking distance, pushing, or like a mile. Because it's all about time. It's all about time.
Okay.
And in the wintertime, you know, our days are shorter.
Yes.
Right.
So one thing that has really driven me kind of crazy over the years is, and it's just the luck of the draw. The shows that I've done that have a lot of night work always film in the summertime.
Oh.
And then most of the shows that have a lot of day work, you know, it's like, oh, it'll start, you know, filming in January. Yeah. So, you know, like, it's you're constantly racing the clock.
Mm.
So those are things that I'm concerned about
too.
Amazing.
Thank you for that breakdown. Yeah.
So it's interesting. So once we pick a location, my department is tasked with everything else you see and do when you go on location, and people don't think about it. Most of the crew, they just show up and everything's there.
Right.
So the maps to get to work. I'm doing the contracts for the use of the location, the supporting locations, whether that's for catering or staging. Sometimes you have some neighbors you have to pay, you buy their driveways, that type of thing. Tents, restrooms, pop-ups. If we're filming in somebody's pool, is that pool heated or do I have to get special effects to come in and heat? What do my grips and electricians need? I pull the film permits. I work with the production office to get the proper insurance. And so, you know, and this will kind of bleeds over to the tech talk because for my area of use, because that is everything that we touch, control, and impact.
Okay, our Let's Talk Tech for this episode is area of use. I love when
area
I learn
of
something
use.
New. So, because I was, it just dawned on me, right? I think of location manager. Oh, the location where you're going to shoot, but you have to think of all of the other aspects. It's not just what the audience is eventually going to see.
Yes,
because as you said, you've got to know about. Did you call it supplemental areas?
Sure,
right,
sure. Like the neighborhood. If you're shooting in a residential area, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not just about what the camera sees.
Right.
Crew park, base camp, which is where the actors get ready. Like it's
and crew
so
parking.
Much.
It's everything.
So much.
The beauty of the location department is that we interact with every department.
Every department.
Yes. And that's the thing I love about my job. Yes. You know, and I try to tell the people that work with me, and that's the thing. I don't necessarily say that people work for me. I want people who work with me.
Because you're a tree. It's the tree.
It's the
working
tree.
Together.
And you have to figure out as a department head, you have to figure out people's strengths and their weaknesses.
Yes.
And use them effectively. You also have to know when people aren't right for your department too and how to handle that.
Ooh.
You know. And then locations isn't for everybody.
Right.
It was great for me because it put me, I like logistics. Mm-hmm. I like dealing with finance. I love talking to people. And I have a creative streak. So there's times where there might be something written in a script and I might have an idea about a location. It's like, let me just slide this in. This might be a little different concept, but I think it works really well. And several times they've picked locations or changed a particular set in a script based on something I've suggested.
Did you get any director credit when you did?
No. Because we're
not to take away from the director, but they were lucky that you gave them those tidbits.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So you're a part of all of that.
I love it. I love it. There's lots of ways that you can support us on Sister Brunch. You can join our Patreon, patreon.com/sisterbrunch, S-I-S-T-A brunch. Or you can follow us on Instagram at Sister Brunch Podcast. That's S-I-S-T-A podcast. Join us there, engage with the content. Let us know what kind of guests you might want to have on or questions that you have for us to ask our guests. We appreciate any and all engagement that you give us. It helps us grow as a podcast. It helps reach more people. So we appreciate it.
Hi, I'm Kelly Harris, and you're watching Sister Brunch Podcast.
I love the area of use. That
area
is just,
of use.
That's a new term. That
yes.
Is, I love this. So now we talked about how you got started. We talked a little bit. Should we talk about financials?
Yeah. Let's talk about financials.
Financials. If you want to give like basic average salaries of someone in your position or ALM or location manager, scouts, you can do that or not. Or if you want to talk about the price of getting certain locations, like permits. I know that the mayor recently made it a lot easier to get permits and licenses in the city, right?
Mm-hmm. Or they're working on it.
Well,
a lot of it is. There's been a lot of criticism about Film LA.
And you want to talk about what Film LA is?
Okay. Yeah, actually Film LA is a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. It's not a city organization. Mm-hmm. And their job is, they're kind of like the hub for us to turn in permit information. They reach out to the various city offices. Mm-hmm. So it's like kind of a one-stop shopping for us to get our permits, and then they receive a fee. And lately there's been grumbling about Film LA.
It's just expensive. The fees are expensive, but it's expensive to film in LA, period.
Correct.
Right?
And it's not, and people will probably hate me for this, but it's not necessarily always a Film LA problem, because they don't control how much the fire department will charge for a fire safety officer.
Right. Ah. Exactly.
They don't control how much DOT, the Department of Transportation, will charge for their labor to come out to make sure that our lane closure is correct, mm-hmm. or, you know, to process mm-hmm. their paperwork. Yeah. So there's some things that could be done a little bit differently, but they don't have control over what other cities, you know, and what these departments are charging financially, you know, the police, you know, like we have a contract with the police department to hire, you know, retired police officers that will come and work movie details. You know, those are union positions. So they negotiate mm-hmm. with, you know, the producers on what to pay those people. So Film LA isn't really responsible for what some of these, you know, organizations are charging.
But then they end up, it looks like they're the ones charging it because it's part of the permit. And I do have to say, because I don't talk about my job a lot on this podcast, but I'm at the California Film Commission and our permits are free. All state-owned property permits.
Yes,
it's worthwhile saying it. Then you have to pay for your
monitors. Producers, you heard it. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, state-owned property. So outside of LA, it is cheaper. And we encourage productions to happen outside. But that's all. We need to do a whole tax incentive episode. So we'll do that at some point.
Yes, we do.
And the thing with Film LA, too, you know, when the public has a complaint or a problem, they call Film LA, and then Film LA calls us.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, and I think that's where kind of some of the folks in my position get upset with Film LA, because, you know, it's like you get that phone call, you look, and it's Film LA. They're not calling to say hello and everything's wonderful.
Right.
A big part of the job is being prepared, anticipating any and everything that can come up. Okay. But then you also have to realize there's certain people in certain neighborhoods that have their council person on speed dial.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And then sometimes when we are prepping a location and we have to approach neighbors or businesses, there's people that absolutely just hate filming. And you really have to, that you just need to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you end
listening
up getting
is a skill that you need to work and do well in this industry.
Yeah. And if you're doing what the city has designated you to do to gain a permit, you know, and there's a percentage of signatures and things like that that you need, you know, you never want to tell a person like, look, I got my signatures and, you know. We're going to be here, you know.
Well, Kelly, before we move on, can we go back to, you know, the original question? If you would like to, people that may want to get into the supervising location manager department, do you want to give like salaries average, not necessarily yours?
Or is there scale if you're comfortable talking about like
the different levels?
There are union wages, and I wish I should have written them all down. But these are like approximations. Like an entry level location person might make around $2,000 a week.
Okay.
They also, you know, part of our union deal, because we are Teamsters, we're Teamsters
99.
The location managers in New York are DGA.
Yes.
Which is very interesting.
Yeah. It's East Coast. They're part of DGA. Yes.
Location manager. Their assistants, I don't believe, are union, or they're trying to figure that out. But I know that the managers are DGA, and a lot of the managers I've worked with back there, like in the beginning when I did Rage in Harlem, they're all producers and, you know, doing or retired or dead now. But, you know, so
2K start entry level, 2K a week.
Yeah. And then they get a car rental. Which is around 90, 91 a week. And then there's a box rental. That type of thing. So key assistant location managers, and like I said, this is like ballpark. I'm going to say they're around probably 2,500. Mm-hmm. And then location managers, we make $1 million a year.
So, hey, we found our new job.
I'm sorry, what was I doing wrong? Or million?
No, it depends on the project. Yes. So like scale these days might just starting, I want to say it's hovering closer to around 4. And then that's almost like a base.
Yes.
And then you can, of course, negotiate a higher rate.
And we like to talk about that and encourage our guests. You know, obviously in that entry-level position, you don't have a lot of room to negotiate. But as you move up and you've got that supervising title, you are in a position to be able to, you don't have to take the first offer, right?
Absolutely. Well, you know, and it comes down to, I think, knowing your worth and your value. And the people that hire you, they know what you're worth.
There you go. Yes,
and it's their job to save money.
Right.
And it's their job
to give you the least that they can.
Or, you know, like tell you things like, well, on the next project, on the next. Well, it's very different now. When I started out, you would have producing teams that would hire you because I started with Spelling Entertainment.
Okay.
Wow.
And so,
So for me, my television introduction was Melrose Place.
Yes.
And that's how I met Ed Duffy. So Spelling, they would just move the crew from show to show to show to pilot to pilot to pilot.
Like they meant it. If they said you were, you know, we're going to bring you back on.
They meant it.
They really meant it.
Right.
They can't even say that anymore, right? Because there's just
not enough
infrastructure in that sense, right? And there are shorter amount of episodes per season. Mm-hmm. So,
And that's a wonderful point you bring up, because when I started in television here, we were shooting
23, 24, 26
episodes.
We're down to like 8, 10. For a season,
six.
Oh my goodness. So you're constantly looking for the next gig. Whereas when I started, it was great.
You were chilling
because
I know what it means to winter in LA now.
And it was one of those things where you know, I felt like I had a school teacher schedule. I would work 7, 8, 9 months a year and have 3 months off. I'd either go work on another show or take a vacation or do those type of things. And then I want to say it was 2008 when, you know,
after the strike, the writer's strike,
and streaming came in, and then, you know, you have HBO and all these other people that started doing 10 and 13 episodes of things. And, you know, and then the studios, I think they kind of rethought some of their business plans, because it's like, you know, you commit to like 20 plus episodes. And what if your show's a bomb?
Right.
If it's bad, it's horrible. Yes. And you've committed to paying people, because, you know, when that whole thing started with the 13 episodes, sometimes they'd be like, we're going to give you 7 more, you know, so you get the back
nine. The back nine used to be really huge. Yeah. You get 13 and they're like, we got the back nine. That was, you know.
So they weren't contracting you beyond
for the whole
that
thing,
first
a lot of shows, right? And first then, season shows.
Then you get,
you got 13. Let's see how you do.
Okay.
And that was network their television. Way of protecting themselves.
Yes.
They thought, this is great.
Yeah.
And as much as we want to think when we have strike situations that, oh, it hurts the studio and this and that, I think it always gives them a chance to rethink how they do business.
Yes.
And in major corporations, sometimes it's good to show a loss. They're not always losing money.
Interesting. So, they're not going to lose the money anyway. They're going to get a write-off. That is a write-off for them.
Yeah.
Ultimately, sometimes it is, you know, the lack of protection for the labor is about ego.
Absolutely.
Right. It's just about how are we going to look if we have to start paying you all a fraction of what we actually get paid.
Yes.
Right.
They're still making money. So say, for instance, last strike.
Yep.
Now,
in 2023,
thank you.
SAG and Writers Strike.
Both at the same time.
Screen Actors Guild, Writers Guild of America.
Right. Now, for instance, let's say if you were in a show that was working in production and the strike came and you shut down, you still have sets, equipment, and everything on their stages. So you're still paying rent.
Yes. Yes, you are.
So they're still making money.
They're always still making
money. And then,
money.
You know, it's... Go ahead.
I was going to say, on the financials question, because I'm mm-hmm. so, again, this is a role that, you know, we've had so infrequently on this show, or mm-hmm. not at all, first time on the show. So we talked about the salary. I also am curious about location budgets.
Absolutely. My right? favorite.
So like, what would be the difference between an indie film location budget and a big budget feature film? And then for TV, what do the budgets look like?
A Shondaland show example. Yes. Spelling. Yes.
Well, it really depends. Like if you're doing say a micro budget thing, you know, where mm-hmm. it's just a 15 minute thing or whatever. Yeah. Hopefully you get your locations for free.
You hear that right now? You know, we can't guarantee you that Kelly Harris will be your location manager, but we are saying.
But you never know.
You never know because
it's also about, you know, like perfecting your craft.
Yes.
And sometimes when it's you take on, and I don't want to call them low budget, like micro budget or an indie,
yes.
it gives you an opportunity to just kind of remember where you came from.
Yes, we okay. can all use that. We
remember
can all
where you
be
came
reminded.
From.
Yes.
And then if you ever, you know, had thoughts of learning to produce or learning how to UPM or, you know, that type of thing, anything, mm-hmm. if there's mm-hmm. anything, it's like, it's about an all hands on right. deck situation.
Right.
And that's where it's
that
safe.
That would be Sister Brunch. That would be this
absolutely.
Team
yes.
right here.
Absolutely.
Tasha, Charlie, Sam. Yeah, absolutely.
So
just
you have
everyone
that.
Filling in to get mm-hmm. to get everything done. Okay, mm-hmm. I love that.
You might have a project that's an indie project. And for instance, I was approached about someone and they're like, you know, well, we have 75 grand for our locations.
Okay.
And I'm like, well, let's take a look at the script. And I looked at the script and I'm like, and what I said to them, you never want to tell people that something doesn't work or it's not enough. You know, okay. what I say
we'll
to
work
them.
Work on it. That's
we'll
a word.
You will work on it. But what I'll say is, that's a good starting point.
Okay. Yes. Oh, that's nice. That's nice of you.
It's a good starting
nice
point.
That's nice of you. Know what? This is also reminding me when you are putting together your pitch package, a pitch deck, et cetera. And a lot of times, you know, if you think creatively, mm-hmm. you're not thinking about the business piece. And so I always push people, make sure you understand the budget. And then if you've got like a period piece, you should mm-hmm. consult with a locations person mm-hmm. so that, and I'm so curious about Rage in Harlem. It's a perfect example, right?
Oh,
where
yes.
it wasn't just that you needed, you know, buildings that looked like they were in Harlem. You needed them that looked like during the Renaissance, right?
Exactly.
Like it had to be a particular time period too.
You're removing parking meters.
Yeah, right.
Back then we still had pay phones.
Wait, how do you remove
no burglar bars on all, windows.
Right. All of that came right. off. Street lights. That was
street
a big
lights,
deal.
Street lights, all the things that
so
were not there.
You're
yeah.
contracting mm-hmm. with different departments in town to have all those things removed.
Yeah.
You have to make sure that your streets are clear because you're going to end up parking vehicles from the 20s and 30s.
Right.
We're
right.
on the streets yes. there. So yes. just everything, every window, everything we saw, like if somebody put like a new mailbox on a door, you know, on their
right.
front,
right.
all that had to be stripped
yeah.
down.
Yeah.
So that's where you end up working very, very closely with the art department and with the production designer,
yes.
mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. Because they are doing a lot of the research, and we do too. That's the thing I love about my job.
Yes.
You know, it's not always waiting for somebody to tell you what to do. You can do the same research.
Right.
You know, I have access to all the same information yeah. as my production designer mm-hmm. or my, you know, set decorator, anybody.
Yeah.
And they like it when you care and pay enough attention to what they need to do, because you might catch something that they don't
right.
see. You know, like a phone number, or like, well, we didn't have that, you know, or let's make sure we cover that up, or, you know, all these things like that. Yeah. So it's very collaborative.
I love it.
Yeah.
Can I ask, we're talking about financials, like yeah. you're talking about indies, micro budgets.
Mm-hmm.
We've all been hearing about these new not necessarily new, mm-hmm. but verticals.
Yes.
Has verticals changed
ooh,
your part of the industry
okay.
and you want to
so
get
glad
into
you're
that?
Asking about that. Yes.
Okay. This is amazing.
I love it. Yes. Yes.
Because I am so curious about verticals.
We've been yes. talking about every guest now. Yes. And I'm realizing we didn't ask Diana Williams about it. Yeah.
Oh,
we've been
yes,
talking about
right.
it, right? Speaking of things. Yes. Yes.
And it's not going to go away. So we need to
not.
We need to figure out
We need to know how to do it. We do not need to get lost in the dust like we have in the past. We need to be part of this. Yes.
Absolutely. And we're doing everything else. So this will be nothing for us. We just have to figure out how to shoot that particular format.
Yep.
I spoke to a young lady I met the other day who is an actress, and she said she had been participating in some verticals. She goes, that's what's been keeping me going.
Yeah.
And she goes, well, she's African-American. She goes, most of the stories are centered around, you know, white people. And she goes, but when I've been going to the sets and the crews are all Chinese.
Yes.
Because the Chinese companies are the ones that really kind of got it started. They're the ones that are making a lot of money on these, but not paying a lot for them.
Well, it depends. Yeah. I think if you get enough going, or if you're shooting, because I want to look at it like this. If I'm doing an hour episode or something, and I break it into 4 15-minute segments, those are four, you know, different episodes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's no different. I think we just have to learn how to shoot the same. Because we're so used to, you know, seeing the beautiful wide shots and sweeping.
It's the formatting and the story. If you're going to break down an hour long
to get to it quickly,
each one,
that's the thing.
And those cliffhangers are important because the whole point is make them bingeable.
You want them to see the next episode. We want them to get to the next episode. Keep going.
And I think it'll be a big boom actually for locations, in the sense that if you have one hero location, because you're shooting in that vertical format, you're going to be able to cheat more additional locations.
You can get five locations
in one location.
Yeah. Because you're not seeing anything outside of that little 9x16.
So, producers love that, by the way. Yeah. When you can get multiple sets in one location, they're like, mwah!
I love it. I don't think it's something to be afraid of. I think it's something we need to embrace. I don't even say get our foot in the door. I mean, it's one of these things, we can do it. We just have to do it.
Listen, Sister Brunch is available to film your vertical, to produce your full verticals. For real, Todd.
Yes.
We've been talking about this for real. There is no reason why Sister Brunch shouldn't just become a production company for verticals, because these are things we can absolutely do. We'll do it right here at You Podcaster in Hollywood.
We have writers, we have producers,
we
DPs,
got everything we
directors.
Need. And look at, this is also why we do it, is because look at, we've got everything. And we get to work together.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
We don't have to be the only one on the set because we are all together in it, right?
We should be telling our stories.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay, we have spent our careers
Telling everybody else's
stories.
We still will tell everybody else's stories. Because we know their stories. They don't know our stories. Yes. We know theirs ours.
And it's because we're a part of that history too.
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
I think it's just broadening our horizons. And the whole AI thing. I look at it like this. Mm. I've been using AI for years. Anytime I pull up Google.
Yes.
Anytime I talk to Siri.
Yep.
Anytime I use Alexa, I understand what the concerns are in terms of intellectual, they're valid.
There's algorithm bias. There's
you absolutely. Right, like,
and at the same time, it's the same with verticals. We will be left behind if we don't get on board with it.
And sooner rather, we're already behind if we haven't started. So it's one of these things you can study. You can learn, like we're all, we're so amazing. We're just amazing, brilliant people. And look, as long as you can read and you can figure out stuff, you can do anything.
I love it.
You can do anything.
I love it.
And I love, it's like the, what Diane, our other guest was saying, like, okay, the what. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say, don't worry about the how, but you know, there is a point when you do. And that's where we all come together for collaboration.
That's right. That's right.
And the how, especially in locations, the how is everything.
Mm. Yes. Yes.
And people, my producers don't necessarily want to know all the questions. They just want to see the results.
Right. They're like, don't even tell us what all you had to do to get there. We just want to know, where is it going to be? We want,
And if it's within the budget.
And it's so, within the budget.
And, yeah. and there's times when there will be problems and things that will creep up. And look, you have to know when you need to go to that producer and let them know what's going on, you know, and that comes with experience because each day, moment, time that you wait and you know that, okay, this is something, this hurdle, we're never going to get over it. You know, you always have to have a plan B, you know, because owners, that's the other thing with locations is that, you know, look, if I'm a grip electrician or carpenter or something, like when I go to my vendor, that 2x4 is going to cost, that price isn't going to change. You know, I know I can get it there. It's not going to change. That 2x4 is not going to get mad at me. You know, that light is not going, this microphone is not going to get mad at me.
Right.
You know,
right.
In locations, you're dealing with people's personalities and moods and everything.
Yes.
And what they've heard from other people about location filming.
About location filming, about,
and your they're going to ruin your spot. Yeah. And Kelly's department is the first point of contact. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So it's very important for, you know, we all know first impressions are lasting impressions.
Yeah.
And that is your department majority of the time.
And then for my crew, I want us to be known as the location department, not the no-cations department.
I love it.
And sometimes you'll have folks that, you know, get a little weary and, and worn out doing the job. And look, some things you're going to know that you it's going to be a little bit difficult to do. Like if I have someone say to me, producer or director, like, okay, I want to close the 405, for instance, on Friday at 3 o'clock and film. And okay,
like I hope you have
Christopher Nolan,
$3 million just for that.
And we need to do it next week.
Yeah, right,
know?
Right.
So
right.
there's certain things. It's like I might not be able to do that for you, but I got a good option for you. I got a good backup for you.
Yes.
Mm. So that's the other thing.
Yeah, that's what makes you good at it is to have all those options and don't say no. You say yes. Okay, here's what we can do.
Yeah, so Kelly, getting on to Sister Brunch signature question. Imagine you're sitting down with your younger self. It could be any age, 20s, teens, elementary school.
At this point, any age is younger.
What are you both eating? Yes. What are you both eating? What are you both drinking?
Okay.
And what do you tell your younger self?
That's an amazing question. We would have scrambled eggs, fruit, sourdough toast.
Oh, okay. I love sourdough.
And a cup of tea.
Nice.
What's your favorite tea? What's your favorite tea?
I like green tea. I'll drink black tea, but I like, you know, green tea. And I think what I would tell my younger self is protect your health, protect your reputation, protect your time and your finances. I'd also tell her not to lose sight of what her dreams are, making other people's dreams come true.
My goodness.
I love
and
that.
That's you I love being that. A director, by the way. Like, that's, yes.
Yes.
You can get sidetracked.
You nurtured everybody else in every production. Mm-hmm. It's your time. Yeah. I love that. Yes.
And then also, it's a great adventure and you're going to meet wonderful people and you're going to be able to go places and access things and see things that you otherwise would have no business. I had no business being at a production, let's say a country club, you know, or being on somebody's private plane.
Yeah. And
scouting at the Pentagon or, you know, in a Federal Reserve or, you know, when I did Silicon Valley, when they hired me, they asked me, you know, can you recreate San Francisco, you know, here in Los Angeles? And I said, of course I can. And then I said to them, I said, so when are you going to send me up north so I can go scout these places and become familiar? Yeah. And they actually sent me up to the Bay Area and got me inside of Google. I actually physically got into Google. I got into Facebook. I was able to visit some venture capitalists, all types of things. Uber, when it was first starting out,
all
these things. And that's stuff that happens because of this career. And I think like the most amazing thing about the journey, which is full circle, because of this job and because of the people I've met and my experiences, it's brought me here today to share my time with you.
You're going to make us cry. Stop it, Kelly. Oh my gosh.
I guarantee you Tasha's crying because Tasha be crying.
And what a great Kelly. Note to end it's this beautiful. Episode on.
Thank you. Thank you so
well, thank
much.
You.
We're
Thanks
so
for
proud
having.
To have you
thank
on.
You. Yeah.
Thank you.
I love this.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Sister Brunch podcast. Sister Brunch is brought to you by Trujillo Productions. Our season 7 producers are Sam Henderson and Tasha Rogers. Our associate producers are Ashanti Groves and Charlie Savage. Sister Brunch is filmed on the land of the Tongva, the Chumash, the Serrano, and the Keech peoples here in Los Angeles and at U Podcaster Studios in Hollywood. Thank you so much for listening and watching, and we will see you next week.